Oh, wait.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Literacy View. We have a special guest on tonight. He is a superpower, and this is my friend, Jake Sussman.
Oh, me.
Yes, you.
Hey, everybody. Nice to see you.
And Jake Sussman is the founder of Superpower Mentors, and he is somebody who struggled himself with learning differences. He can relate to children who are going through some difficulties in school, and he made a successful business for himself by being able to relate to others. He'll tell you about his business when we get started, but I wanted to take this opportunity to just let parents and teachers know that dyslexia and ADHD does not have to hold people back, that Jake is successful, he is confident, he has high self-esteem. It might not have always been that way. We're going to find out tonight, but he is a wonderful model, and I'm sure we're all going to enjoy listening to his story. So to get started, here's my first question, Jake. So what gave you the confidence to be able to start a business if, in fact, throughout school, school was a struggle?
Well, first of all, it's so great to be on, Faith and Judy. Really, I admire all the work that you do, and I'm so happy to be on and diving into all the things. So, Faith, to answer your question about where did I find my confidence to do this, you're right. It wasn't always there, okay? Growing up, it really started in third grade and it hit rock bottom in sixth grade, where I was four grade levels behind in reading, forced to read out loud in class to the point where I developed a stutter. And I'll never forget the time when I was forced to read out loud in class. I would hear my peers laughing at me because I developed a stutter, because I was always corrected all the time. And I have the chills right now just talking about it, because to go back and to find the confidence somehow to read, I didn't. So that was really where it began. You got to hit rock bottom first. And I went down this whole path to discover who I was. And all this time, I mean, I was told that I would never go to college. Okay. So from that point, I had the opportunity to navigate my own mind. I became obsessed with understanding how I learn. And I found a passion for communication. Okay. And I'm going to jump really far ahead in the story, and we're going to go back throughout our conversations. But I want to answer your question, Faith, because I found my confidence to do this when I wrote a poem called The Forgotten Child, which is the reason why I'm doing my business in the first place. Okay. And it was a poem. Here I am now in college. All right. Recognizing that not only have my peers around me dropped out of school, and all of them have learning differences, but here I am, a junior in college, and I'm making it through somehow. And I realized that I shouldn't be here right now. This was against me. And I made it. I did it. I made it through. Well, at that point, almost, and I graduated eventually, right? But I made it. So I was compelled to write a poem to talk about this experience, not just for Jake Sussman, but to talk about the forgotten child within everyone. And everyone who is misunderstood for who they are from the service, because you don't, when you look at someone, you don't know if they're struggling with reading or if they have dyslexia or ADHD, right? So I want to speak to that forgotten child. And when I started to write it, people came forward. People came forward. And I realized I was given the ability to have a voice. And I know that many don't. So I decided, and you know, in this time, I didn't always want to start my own business doing this work in education. I hated school, right? I ended up going into working for another company. I had some startup ideas. Great. But then my good friend, Harvey Hubble, he is a 3-time Emmy Award winning filmmaker, decided to turn my poem into a film. And we launched in October 2019. And within 24 hours, it goes viral. And here I am, by the way, perfectly stable job, watching this thing go viral. And I'm like, all right, I got to have an ADHD impulsive moment, because this is a time to run. If I'm going to do something crazy, it's right now. So I decided to quit my job, perfectly stable job, on a Friday, random Friday. And I started to travel the country speaking on the kid in the back of the class who can't be reached. And every time I would speak, Faith and Judy, right, parents would come up to me and say, do you work with kids? Now, my whole insecurity was all raging, because like, what if I'm not good enough? Like, I haven't, not a day have I worked in a school. I'm not a teacher. I have a background in business and communication, right? And I realized that my credibility is not in my professional experience, because right now it's not working, right? There's a lot of issues in the professional world. That's a whole other conversation. But my credibility is in the fact that I not only have the thing, I've lived it, I can speak the same language, and I could be a role model for these kids. And that's where it began.
You know what? I love that authentic voice. You know, that to me is what is necessary. We always talk about that, Judy, right? That you and I do the work. We roll up our sleeves and do the work, and we're credible. And you could see that that really is what sells Jake. And that's why I loved him the minute I heard him, the minute we talked. He's just the real deal, you know? And that really goes over well with people. People right. appreciate that. So Judy, I think what I heard from Jake is he showed that he was okay to be vulnerable. Okay. Like, if you ever listen to people talk on TED Talks, right, you'll see that there's this whole issue of people putting themselves out there and coming clean with something and showing their vulnerability. So, Judy, just in terms of what you just heard, do you have any kids who you have worked with, or your own children or a family member, that kind of Jake's story resonates with you? Because I have a story, but I want to hear from you. Anything that kind of rings a bell when you listen to this?
Well, when I hear Jake say that, and my voice is a bit raspy today, I do think about students, but I actually also think about myself. Since I was a little girl, I never thought I was good enough. I was a perfectionist, even with literacy, right? With Faith, when we first started this podcast, you knew my background, right? I had a background in balanced literacy. I was reading recovery. I was scared to do this podcast. I didn't know how the world would feel about me, because I had that training. But now for the last 7 years, I've invested my whole being into structured literacy, and I was scared as hell. I didn't know if people would like me. I didn't know if the SOR world would accept me because I had that background. So I think that feeling of being not good enough was something that I always struggled with in my life. I don't know why. My parents never really put pressure on me. I did relatively well in school, but since I was a little girl, I always thought that I could do better. I think in terms of students that I've worked with, a lot of them are still young. A lot of them are struggling to read. I don't really know for some of my private clients what that looks like in the classroom. I wish I could like see what it feels like or what's going on in there. It can't be fun, because a lot of the kids that I work with, they're very, very bright. Even though they're struggling with reading, they are extremely bright. And I could only imagine that it's really not fun being the kid that is struggling with reading. And the hardest thing to still see is that a lot of schools are transitioning, but not fully, that these kids that are struggling are not given the proper instruction. Maybe for a half hour, they're given good phonics instruction, but the rest of their literacy block doesn't look good. And kids mm-hmm. know that things are hard for them. And, you know, I also use Acadian screeners a lot. And Acadian screeners are a big thing now in New York City. And kids have to read a reading passage for about a minute. In second grade, there's three passages. And in the other grades, there may be less. But I could, you know, and I'm happy that those screeners are 1 minute. But it's really not fun for a kid that sees words and can't read it. It's so uncomfortable for me to see kids can't read. I think it's important information, but I think we have a crisis in this country. And until we really start talking about that self-esteem portion and realizing how painful it is, not only to their parents, but to the kids, we're not going to get as far as we need to.
So oh, I agree. I agree with that. Sure, jump in. Yes.
Okay. This is just said, you both said so many great things. And I think as this conversation progresses, it's going to create itself. And for those listening, you know, and Judy, you really nailed that on the head, because behind every strong person is pain. Right. And Faith, you're talking about credibility, right? So what is credibility? It's relative. You know what I mean? What defines someone who's credible? And I can't help myself but to think about what makes a good teacher versus a great teacher. A good teacher hears, but a great teacher listens. Mm-hmm. And there's two very different things. So when we're talking about self-esteem, and for our teachers watching this, and for our parents watching this, right? Listening is a muscle. Everyone can hear. Well, not everyone. Most mm-hmm. people can, right? But to listen is a muscle, and that requires to lose the ego. It requires to be able to be okay with your past. And Judy, look, we have all struggled. And to be able to get vulnerable, and as a teacher, to relate to our kids, to look at a struggling reader who is in pain. I would have nausea whenever I picked up a book. How can you teach me Orton Gillingham or any type of structured reading program if I feel like throwing up? Now, the way that my teachers were able to get through to me was because they got vulnerable too.
Mm-hmm.
They told me they struggled too. We look at teachers like they're gods, because as kids, that's our entire reality. So I know all my teachers' names growing up. I forget the content, but I know their names. Ms. Gill, loved Ms. Gill in elementary school. Well, I know what made her amazing. She got eye level with me, said, "Jake, I just want you to know I struggled too. Maybe not with reading, but with something else. And we're going to go through this together." That is what lit me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So very interesting. Now, my story is a little bit different. So it was really my sister who struggled, and not academically. She had a speech and language problem. And, you know, she still had that growing up, and that affected her tremendously. It affected her confidence. It affected self-esteem. It affected lots of areas of her life. But she ended up working her butt off. And this is what's misunderstood about these kids. These kids are the hardest workers. For me, I have to tell you, I didn't really work very hard, and I always got good grades. I was fortunate. It doesn't mean I didn't work, but I didn't work like she worked. I mean, she used to take a tape recorder into her lectures in college and record her lecture so she could play it back and take notes and be able to stop the pattern of speech so she could process it. It was just too much language all at once. And she would take her notes. And, you know, it was very interesting because there's a big age difference between us. And I used to see how upset my mother would be. So it built empathy in me watching my mother deal with these issues. And so I always had a soft spot and kind of knew that I was always out for the underdog. It kind of, that's what became my superpower, I guess, is understanding the relationship and understanding how important it is to be heard. So I think we all could relate differently, but I do think that what Jake just said before about listening, being that person who listens and shows compassion and can truly empathize with what is going on, that's a superpower. So Jake, right, tell us a little bit about some strategies that maybe you have found successful.
Sure. Actually, it's great timing because I did want to share something. You know, we're actually building a course. So over the past 3.5 years since we started Superpower Mentors, we've worked with hundreds of families from all over the world, working thousands of hours, having the unique opportunity to get inside, right? And to learn really what's happening with these kids. And we've successfully been able to reach the unreachable, okay? So what have we learned? And this is what I would love to share a little bit. So if we want to reach the ultimate goal, which is self-esteem and self-advocacy, because what is self-advocacy? When we say self-advocacy, what are we really meaning? Independence, right? What's the goal of every parent? One of them, at least, is for your kids to be independent. Okay, so where do we start? So there's a formula that we created. So the first step is to get to trust. But how do we get to trust? Because no one is building their self-confidence without trusting the person they're talking to. And that could be a parent, it could be a teacher, it could be a partner, whatever. Okay, so it starts like this. Vulnerability, which is what we're all saying, plus relatability equals rapport. Hold on, not done.
One more time.
Vulnerability plus relatability equals rapport. Then, once I've established rapport, rapport plus reliability equals trust. So if we can accomplish, though that formula, we've officially reached the first milestone in being able to reach into someone who's vulnerable, who is insecure, who's afraid, and whose relationship with, let's say, reading is pain. Okay. Once we've established that trust, we can do anything. But we have to reach that first. So that's one piece of advice and something that I've learned in this work that I've done.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. Judy, you have a son on his way to college. And I know you are absolutely panicked over the separation, right? So now you want your son to be like Jake, I'm sure, independent, strong-minded, being able to speak his mind. Any takeaways for your young man going off to college that maybe listening to Jake that you could see for an older student?
That's a really hard one, Faith. I think as an educator in the classroom, I'm much better at teaching kids to be independent. It is the ultimate goal in the classroom, but for some reason, it's not the same in my home. Maybe it was working mom guilt, Jewish mom guilt. I don't know what it was. I mean, if you look in the corner, you can't see it. I have 35 Amazon boxes of slippers that have holes so that in the shower, it's not disgusting. I keep asking him, do you need anything?
So I think it's a combination of all of it, but that's a beautiful thing. That's called love, you know.
It is called love, but I guess the ultimate goal is that, you know, 3 weeks from now, he goes away and I'm okay with that. And it's hard. It's really, really hard. And I think that, you know, I'm a good person. I love him, but maybe ordering lunch to high school and making sure he had a delicious roast beef sandwich all the time wasn't the right approach. I don't know.
So interesting. So
can I?
Yeah, please. Okay, yes, so, go ahead.
There's so much I want to say, but one of our partners at Superpower Mentors, it's an organization. It's actually the largest nonprofit in the country. They give scholarships to dyslexic college students pursuing STEM majors.
Mm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They're the largest in the country. These are kids that go to NASA, Lockheed Martin, amazing organization. Now, we've been working with them for the past 3 years. And they had a 30% dropout rate amongst their freshmen. All right. They're at zero now because of our program. Zero. Our dropout. All right. So the question is, how do we do that? Okay. Because we actually, our bread and butter is transitional periods. And my passion is college because 40% of college students drop out of school in the US. So I want to lower that. That's one of my self missions. Okay. So let's talk about this in your son, because I really feel like that, you know, and I hope he's going to listen to this, but for all of our that are watching this, that are in positions of transition, let's talk about college for a sec, because that's the big unknown. There are a lot of odds stacked against him. And I'm not saying that I'm not saying he's not going to do well, but I just want to put out there what's coming. Has he ever been away from home before?
He slept at his grandparents' house.
Okay. Okay. Your son, for the first time in his life.
Now he goes to the city. He's a wonderful boy. I wanted to be about my kid. He would kill me.
Okay. Well, let's talk general then. Okay. Let's talk general. For these kids, for someone who's neurodiverse, we have a terrible relationship with time. In general, time management, executive functioning, all that. Okay. So now it comes time for going into college. And it's a new environment, which is overstimulation. You have to navigate not only where the dorms are, where you're going to eat, when you're going to eat, your classes, the professors, where do I go, social life, and now accommodations office. And hopefully you get all your accommodations and communicating to all your professors. That's a lot of things to juggle all at once for someone with a learning difference. We thrive when we're in complete control. You give me one job and I'm the best. But when you give me 10 at once, I fall. And that's what we're seeing with a lot of our kids that are transitioning into college. So now what? And I'm not saying this to scare anyone, because I want to paint the reality and then paint the solution. Okay. The most important thing that we can tell our students that you can do right now is encourage the kids to find a mentor. Find someone that they can look up to. Find an ally. Okay. Sure, you can reach out to us, but I'm not making a pitch here. This is about reaching out to an ally, someone that they can trust, whether it's a professor, you're not a teacher's pet, it's actually strategic. Okay. And or just a friend that you can ask questions to. But the biggest hack in college that a lot of students don't think about is the syllabus. The syllabus is a snapshot of time. I can predict, I know exactly what is happening on October 14th, this coming fall. That's not life. That's not reality. But we get that in college. Okay. So the one piece of advice is to encourage our kids. And unfortunately, it's not going to come from mom. All right. Because at this point in college, our kids, my mom told me to make a list all throughout high school and took my freshman year roommate. I saw his list and I had this big epiphany about lists, right? It's going to have to wait, or they find themselves a mentor or whatever. But if we can encourage them to use the syllabus and to look at it and plan and plop it in beforehand, if you want to do anything for your kid, get that syllabus and put it on their calendar, all the due dates. That's one thing I'd suggest. If you're going to do anything, do that.
That's great advice.
What about for little ones though, like in elementary school?
Okay, let's talk about the little ones. All right. So in transitional periods, so like I'm transitioning from middle school, so elementary to middle to high. Okay, great. Well,
we have a lot of kids that can't read in elementary school. What are we going to do about it?
Sure. Okay. And actually, one of our, we just partnered with the first dyslexic public school in the state of New York, Bridge Prep Charter School. So we're really excited. And they're an elementary school. So we're really excited about this partnership with them. And what do we do with these kids that are so turned off from reading or just transitioning them to a new environment that are too young for a syllabus, obviously? The one thing we could do tonight, besides for the building trust for the parents and for the educators, is helping our kids explore their outlets. Now, what do I mean by outlets and how does this have anything to do with reading? Okay. Outlets are the things that we naturally gravitate to when to give us a sense of confidence and control. It could be video games, right? It could be for some reading, but it could be writing. It could be drawing. It could be building Legos. It could be anything that you, all of us have them. And they also could be toxic, drinking, drugs, all that. But everyone's got an outlet, okay? So if we can help our kids explore what their outlets are, and I'm going to narrow it down to make it easier for everyone. We have identified that there are three different types of outlets that we need to feel confidence. And I'll explain what this has to do with reading in a minute. Outlet number one is an outlet that boosts our heart rates. Outlet number two is an outlet that boosts a passion. And outlet number three is an outlet that boosts creative expression. Now, how does this have to do with reading? Let's talk about it. Number one, let's talk about heart rate. I don't care about exercise. That's a byproduct. I'm not talking about go and play basketball. That's all of the actual activity itself is a byproduct of what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is oxygen to your brain. Your brain's a muscle. You can't expect to roll out of bed, eat French toast and cereal and chocolate milk and go to math at 8 a.m. and expect yourself to be anywhere close to focus. Oh, forget also popping your focusing medicine too. So now you're just overstimulated and expect to sit and focus for 8 hours in the day. I'm sorry. I don't know how anyone could do it, ADHD or not. Okay, so that's number one. That's heart rate. And if any of you want to just kind of hop in here, you can.
I just want to say that interesting that you use that example, because before you, Jake, our self-care series, and I'm going to plug that. I'm plugging it because we had mindful teacher Rachel on, and we had on a physical therapist, nutritionist slash fitness trainer.
Nice.
And both of these people talked about focus and the foods that we eat and controlling our thought patterns. All of this plays into just what you are talking about.
Okay. So let's pretend that you're a teacher, right? And you can't have your student, you can't control what happens before they come into the classroom. Have them do 25 jumping jacks in the corner.
Right.
Get their heart rate going. You know how easy, like if you're overstimulated, just have them do like 20 push-ups and then they're good again. Okay. Heart rate. I'm done with that. Let's talk about passion. The thing that you can throw the covers off the bed in the morning and jump out of bed. Okay. We can lose our passion and then we lose our drive. Okay. So to help or encourage our kids to explore what a passion is, and it could just be an interest. It could be Legos. It could be a video game. And if they're struggling with reading, and this could be the bullshit button comes on, but like with the struggling, get it ready. Okay. I've actually found this in our program and I'm no reading specialist, but if you can, you can actually, I believe, and I've seen it. One of our kids taught themselves how to read by reading Alicia Keys lyrics because that's what they're passionate about. And that was stimulating for them. And that's what gave them confidence. For me, it was nonfiction. I couldn't read fiction, but for me, it was nonfiction and reading model train manuals. That was mine. Okay. So passion then is creative expression, feeling expressed. It's very in the name. Okay. But that's to feel expressed. So to stimulate those three things, you win. Usually there's something missing. If someone's feeling down, That's where we can start to explore, well, what do we have to add to do this? And it will help us foreshadow possible suggestions for projects, lessons, even hobbies and interests. Anyway, so that's something else that we found to help with these kids. It has nothing to do with reading, but everything to do with it at the same time, because we're talking about walking into that classroom with a little chip on the shoulder.
Right. Interesting. So, you know, when Judy and I started to think about doing a self-care series, I think some people probably were thinking they should stay in their own lane, right? And not go there. That, you know, it's called the literacy view, and that these things are not really about literacy. But now, Judy, after what Jake said, and he's making that gesture, like, there is this holistic view, the whole child. He was the forgotten child, right? This whole child. It's not just like, you know, structured literacy, but we have to take the whole child into consideration. Any thoughts on what Jake just said in kind of laying out that plan? I could tell you, Judy, that I was thinking of Tony Robbins jumping on a mini trampoline before doing a presentation to get his heart rate up, to get psyched for getting out there. I mean, if you ever watch any of his presentations, that's what he does. He jumps on a rebounder to kind of get the blood flowing. Your thoughts, Judy?
So I think that what Jake says is really interesting, but I think that there's so many things in education that make it so hard to feel good. Like, for instance, if you go to college, they have a disability office. A lot of kids don't like that name. It doesn't feel good to go into the disability office, which some kids might say, oh, there's something wrong with me. Screw it. I'm not going there. So I think words have meaning, and that social emotional piece is so important. And I think that right now schools are going in the direction of choosing research and evidence-based programs. And everybody right now is going to be hyper-focused on fidelity. And fidelity is important, but it's also important to remember that we're dealing with humans and they have feelings. And unless we have that way of motivating those students and still having that creativity and still invigorating that passion, we are not, as teachers, we are not robots. Fidelity is important, but it's also important to think about how our students are feeling, giving them creative outlets. Like even Jake mentioning looking at music lyrics. That's brilliant if it worked for that kid. When I was a classroom teacher, I was never the type of teacher that would give kids that I knew had ADHD a hard time. When there was that kid that needed to look for a pencil, I didn't make a big deal that he needed to walk around for a couple of minutes and look for his pencil, which I would give him in a couple of seconds. Or I'd have a kid running in the hallway back and forth and then come back into the classroom. So I'm proud of myself that that came naturally to me. But I think right now in education, everything is so structured, which is great. But we still have to remember these are humans. These are people. They have feelings. Calling things a disability office might not make somebody feel good. Words have meaning. Kids have feelings. Teachers have feelings. So I think, you know, it also stems from the top, right? How are administrators making their teachers feel? Are they feeling safe to do these things that Jake is suggesting? Right. Some buildings they might. Some buildings the boss might look at you and be like, what the hell are you doing?
Wow.
By the way,
I love what she said, Jake. Yeah. I see. I saw you looking like you were ready to jump in three times.
I'm always ready to jump, Faye.
I love it. I love it.
Come on.
I love your passion. Go ahead.
Faith, I just wanted to say something. Jake totally fits our formula of no bullshit.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I'll call it out. Oh, exactly. I need to get one of those. Come
Definitely. We're in the no BS zone. Go ahead.
No, it really is a no BS zone. And I'll say that I talk to teachers. I give them like kind of the reality check, and I love my teachers, and you all are amazing, right? But I also say practice what you preach. And what do I mean by that? Is you're in the field of learning. So the best way to be relevant is to be relevant and stay up to the times. Like ChatGPT, for example, an AI, which is scaring everyone. Well, you know what we're doing in our mentoring program is I would have a kid give me a scenario about like some zombie invasion. And then we have ChatGPT write a whole script on it. And then we start asking it questions and it's answering it. And what we're doing though, is we're using something that's relevant. That's what everyone's talking about today. And then we're bringing it down into a creative way. And you know what? Like even just saying the word ChatGPT or Roblox, you're now relatable and you just got these kids perk their ears up a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly. You're not behind the times. And I'll plug that episode too. We did an episode on AI.
Come on.
The Literacy View. So although we might not be your age, we are rocking it. Right, Jake?
Hell yeah.
Exactly.
Age is relative, babe.
Can I ask Jake a question?
Go ahead.
So Jake, how did you finally learn how to read? I know you mentioned nonfiction, but what was your story? Like, how did it finally happen? And do you feel like you're a confident reader now?
You know, that's a great question. It's still relative. I do still struggle reading. Emails, texts, I am the worst. Just call me, right? Like you got to know where your strengths and challenges are. Now, where I found my confidence.
Remember you called me on a Saturday morning, like it's 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, no, it's bad. I really need a secretary or an administrative assistant.
No, don't become that person.
Why are you calling me?
We don't like that bullshit.
Okay. No, but let me go into this for a sec because it's actually very interesting. And my inspiration for wanting to learn how to read came from a passion. It did. It had nothing to do with the classroom, actually. The classroom gave me the mechanics. But my fire to want to do it, which is very different because that's what causes me to retain the information. Was model trains. That was my thing. I'm obsessed. And I wanted to learn what the words were saying. I wanted to understand how to build it. So I forced myself. I was like, everything that I wanted to learn with reading related to trains. I would watch movies with subtitles. So I got used to hearing the words. I'm an auditory learner. So I would hear the word and put it, and I would see the word and hear it. And I will be like, oh, that's what that means. Cool. Or that's what that sounds like. And I'm starting to do this on a repetitive scale. At the same time, I did go to a school that specialized in kids with learning differences. So I want to give really full credit to that. But I will say that that wasn't possible though, without my willingness to want to do it, which came from a passion. Thus, going back to the beginning of these outlets, we can find the passion to relate it all back home. No one cares about, I respect Shakespeare, but like, if you can't relate to it, it's not going to stimulate creative thinking or memory retention or recall. Like it's not, right? So
finding that thing, you gotta find that thing that lights you up and then use that as a way to encourage kids. Like, okay, this is what you might want to do in life, or this is something you're interested in. Let's look at it. Let's read about it. Let's give them a reason.
Soccer. I'd be like, oh, like, what do you like? Soccer. I love soccer. Okay. So let's find something that has to do with soccer. Mm-hmm. Right. Let's start with that. Let's relate it to something that at least when they're triggered, because we're dealing with triggers. What if we can take reading in the trigger associated reading, like the same trigger, like getting up off the couch to go work out? Like, what if we can actually relate it instead of it's just an activity? No one's born knowing how to read, right? You have to learn it, just like exercise and why does someone want to go work out versus someone that sits on the couch and watch TV all day? What's the difference? They're both activities. Mm-hmm. So I think, in my opinion, if we can relook at reading and our approach to it, like it's another activity that we have to do for our health. It's a human right. Just like exercise. If you don't exercise, I'm sorry, you're not going to live very long. Right.
I better hit the gym. I skipped it today. I feel
good. No, but the same thing with reading. If you don't read, look at our prisons. Mm-hmm. Right. So the point though, is that if we can approach it like going to the gym, right. And the same type of triggers, like I can hire the personal trainer and lose the weight. It doesn't mean I'll keep it off. It has to do with when the music's not playing at home and no one's looking at me. What am I doing?
It's very true. And I think what you say, Jake, is so important. I think, you know, there's no magic bullet. Schools are going to have curriculums now. They're going to have phonics now. But at the end of the day, if kids don't get a chance to apply and actually practice reading, I don't care if your lesson was great, but if kids don't have a chance to read decodable passages as early readers, and we don't make that time in our literacy block, we're not going very far. And that's why a lot of schools are going to say, oh, our data, it's not shifting, it's not working. No, kids have to read. That's going to be my number one mission as a literacy coach, to say, when are the kids reading?
Right.
Who's listening to them? Who's giving them feedback? Who's sitting by their side? None of this drop everything and read deal time anymore. This garbage. Yeah.
Right.
So Jake, you know, in listening to this, I had a lot of thoughts about what you were saying. So mm-hmm. I always talk about the difference between motivation and habit.
Nice.
And I could tell you that motivation is overrated, because, and what I mean by overrated, I am motivated to do things, but if I'm not wanting to do something, it's hard to get motivated, but it's much easier to build a habit. And so the habits that we set forth as parents or teachers need to be structured just like the instruction is structured. That yes. has to be built yes. in to the calendar. What do you say about that, the difference between motivation and habit, and what do you think about it? Because
you also mentioned something too, which was calendar.
Yes, right? The calendar.
Right. And if you ever, I did some research on habits because I think it's fascinating.
Me too. Right?
And, you know, you look at a habit like backing up out of a driveway out of your garage. You know how complicated that is? Like, whoever thought of that's crazy. You know what I mean? Like, you got to like determine speed and distance and pressure on the pedal, and you're doing it backwards. And then you got to look at the oncoming car coming. Like, it's crazy, but yet we do it like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's cool. So what I hear is, what is motivation? What's the flame, right? The flame of motivation is, well, passion. It's scientifically proven to be contagious. Actually, you could do research on it. It's really cool. Okay. So what's the thing that's going to throw the covers out of bed? You know what I mean? And like, and I want to make sure I'm answering your question properly, but when it comes to building habit, because we're talking about two different things, I think, right?
Yes. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I think they're very different. Like a habit is, what's the morning routine like? What's the first thing you're doing when you wake up in the morning, right? What is your child or student doing when they walk into the classroom or go downstairs to the kitchen? Are you telling them that it's time to leave at 8 o'clock and they're late every single time, so you start every day with failure? Or are you saying we're leaving at 7:45, which gives them a 15-minute buffer? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, how are we incorporating habit work into the day, into the morning? And I always say, win the morning, win the day. It's a big belief that I have. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think they all kind of go hand in hand, but it also could be too about what the relationship is with time. Like I said, like if you're, this is actually something that I get a lot, and I think I'm going to answer your question in a long-winded way. and stop me if I'm going off track. But I get this a lot from parents, which is the fight before dinner. What do I do? That fight before dinner every night, there's always a blowout. Like, and I'm like, what are they doing? Playing video games. Okay. Right. Like, that's usually where the fight stems from. So let's talk about this, because we're dealing with bad habits, right? And we're also dealing with where the motivation and parents and arguing and all that stuff. Okay. I would love to dissect this if that's okay, because I think it's really relatable to creating a neurodiverse friendly home. Okay. So let's take this fight before dinner. What's happening? A parent calls their child, honey, it's time for dinner. All right. They say, uh-huh. And they keep playing. Meanwhile, you've called their name like five different times. And by the fifth time, you're yelling.
Yes. Yes. Relatable.
By the fifth time, though, Johnny is like, why are you yelling at me? Right. And it's all this fighting. And you're like, well, you were ignoring me. Then you were like, no, I wasn't, and all this stuff. Well, let's look at that though. What's happening is that our kids are in hyper-focus mode. All right. And it's important that parents and teachers understand what's really going on behind them ignoring you, right? They're in hyper-focus mode. When you're in hyper-focus mode, space, time, hearing doesn't exist. I'm literally texting and my girlfriend's in the middle of a conversation with me. I look at my phone for 2 seconds and it's like she wasn't even talking to me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. Anyway, that's the separate thing. I don't want to bring that in. Okay. No, it's great. She has ADHD also. So we have a blast with it. There's no lose here. It's great. Anyway. So you got to understand what's going on. Your child is not ignoring you. They're hyper-fixated on the screen. They're stimulated. So what's a good solution with this? Instead of yelling across the room and even saying, putting on the Alexa 5 minutes and having it just go off, because kids don't see time well. So what do we recommend to parents in this moment on the topic of habit and routines and motivation? Okay. Instead of yelling from across the house, you walk into their room, wherever they're playing, which it shouldn't be in their room, but usually it is. Okay. You sit down next to them and say, put your hand on their leg or on their, well, that's my hand, but pretend it's the leg. And then, or on their shoulder, which is stimulating, right? It breaks their hyperfocus and says, Johnny, 5 more minutes. And he's going to look at you and he's going to say, okay. Okay. Now you're almost there. But now Johnny doesn't see 5 minutes though. He just hears it, not listens to it. So I recommend to all of our parents, buy yourself a time timer on Amazon where you can visually see time. Put 5 minutes on so Johnny can see what 5 minutes means, because now Johnny can work backwards from time. Now Johnny can visualize it, and let's give Johnny a chance to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it's like changing lives. Yeah. So,
yeah, I used to have one of those types of visual timers in my room as a reading specialist.
Yeah.
And it was very effective to be able to see the red part, because there was like a red little piece. Going, and they could see.
They can see it and learn, build habit around, okay, so 15 minutes, I visualize the pie. Okay, I got it. I know what that looks like.
Yes.
So, okay, I need to do maybe one more level I can do, right? And let them be successful. Yes. And if they don't do it, then we can discipline. But let's do it in their way first. Anyway.
I was once given a piece of advice that I thought was very interesting by a psychologist.
Yeah.
Try not to make dinner time always the same old conversation that's negative. Did you do your homework? Did you do this? Did you do that?
Yeah.
Just try to have like a normal conversation, because I am a bit of a to-do list kind of mom. Did you do this? Why didn't you do this? Having just a normal conversation. Hey, how was your day? And just like sharing experiences rather than kids just dreading that experience of being together.
We all do that. Yeah, I think we're all guilty of that, Judy. Yeah. Because it's like once you kind of get them in the same place together, you just want to ask them all these questions. And the last thing they want to do is respond at that point. Right.
Can I say something controversial?
Yeah.
Can I say something controversial? Is that all right?
Bullshit.
No, you're going to. No, I mean, like, I'm. So I think I've said this last time I was talking to Faith, but I want to bring it up again because parents are going to be watching this and yeah. I want them to grab dad. Because I've worked with hundreds of families and only a handful of dads.
Mm, me too.
Where is dad? Okay. And I'm not saying dad's not around or dad's not trying. Okay. But this is something I've seen. And I don't know if in your work, if you're experienced working with mostly mom versus dad. Okay. But our kids, I growing up with a learning disability, right? I needed both pillars, both my parents. Okay. If that's possible. If it's possible, I want to recognize that it may not be possible, but if it's possible, okay, to bring dad and really encourage dad to bond through other means and just let it happen, right? Let the journey happen in its time. But I know it's emotional. A lot of times it's reliving your pain past through your kids. It's very deep, right? But I do want to encourage families to bring in conversations with dad and having both parents take time. My parents used to do this thing called date night, where each of my parents, because most of the attention was on me because I was the one struggling the most, I have two other siblings, they would go out of their way and have date night with each of my siblings, including me. And it wasn't together, it was one-on-one. So dad will take me to the Knicks game, mom will take me somewhere, and each parent I developed my own unique relationship with, which by the way, made that family time really fun. Mm-hmm. So I know it may be a touchy subject to some families listening to this, but if there's a way to team up, whether you're married or not, but if there is a way to team up together, your kids, that's what they need from you, especially those who are neurodiverse.
Such good advice. You know, it's interesting because, yeah, it seems like it is mom who's always the one trying to create this very structured environment. And then it's always like dad who's there for the fun of it, you know? And I'm not saying it's in every family, but it's like when it comes time to the for the weekend or play or whatever, like dad is perceived as the fun one and mom is perceived as the right. one who is, oh, she's bothering me. She's nagging me. She's this, she's that. Where what you're saying, Jake, is it's healthy that each parent, whether together or not,
yep.
that if you aren't the only one kind of setting these rules down and wanting to check in all the time, that at least they could see that it's more than just one person doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. And like having a game night or playing Scattergories, which actually could be triggering to some kids. So maybe not, but like, you know, actually it became fun later on, but I could understand why it may not be early on, but like, just let's like take the pressure off a little bit. When it comes time for family dinners, just make it fun. And let's just like start to maybe do something different. Go have a picnic outside. It's beautiful out, right? Don't just eat in the same dining room. Maybe just try once a week. Go on a walk with the family. Just something. And I think what will happen, bringing it back home to the classroom, is that's like an anchor, right? Like being having a calm home can come into the classroom, especially when it comes time to tackling a challenge, to be more likely to want to tackle that challenge too. Mm-hmm. Right. Anyway, we're walking around thin lines here, but I do just want to just make sure we touch upon that because it is a holistic approach to encourage a child to be more self-confident, and advocate for themselves. There's not one size fits all model.
Yeah. I think that's really good advice. So before we started recording, Jake, the three of us were talking about your own school experience and some of your own struggles. And then you told us about when you went to a private school, a yeshiva, how different that environment was and what you learned from it. Do you mind sharing what you talked about?
For sure. So I'm Jewish and I have been very fascinated with Jewish education. Okay. Statistically, Jews over the past thousands of years, quick 2 second history lesson, we've been subject to prejudice for thousands of years. Okay. And it's been illegal to be educated as a Jew. So the question is, where did this education come from? So I wanted to understand this because I learned that, and I wouldn't consider myself to be Orthodox, right? But I learned that it's very unique. And there's something that perhaps the modern day education system can learn from this way of teaching. Okay, so I went to a yeshiva, and for those of you that may not know, it's an Orthodox school dedicated to learning the Bible, the Torah, all right? And I learned something fascinating. And for our families trying to get a little bit like, whoa, where is this guy going? Just hear me out. So the difference, the real big difference between an Orthodox yeshiva and a university library, oh, is the library. There we go. Okay. You walk into a library of a yeshiva, you can't even hear yourself think. You walk into a library of a university, you can drop this pencil and you can hear it. So why is that relevant? And how does that relate to today? What could we learn from a library so loud you can't hear yourself think and a library that you can hear yourself think because it's so quiet? All right. What I learned was that the library that's so loud where you can't hear yourself think, there's something cool happening. It's called Chavrusa style. And you add a little phlegm in there. Chavrusa style, right? Oh, all right.
So,
yeah, L'chaim, right? What is a Chavrusa? It's basically, you are matched like a mentor. You are matched to another classmate. And the homework is not to do it on your own by yourself, but is to take the lesson that you just learned in class and debate, right? You know, here, three Jews, four opinions. You're literally supposed to debate and talk. And it goes from one way receiver of where you're just receiving the information to now where the student becomes the teacher. And now you're talking about it. You're diving in. You're doing this assignment together. So what I've learned, long story short, is that the yeshiva education model, the Jewish education model, takes a whole mind approach. They're stimulating every type of learner in that classroom. At what point in our history did education become every man for himself?
Fascinating.
So long story short, that's something that I've learned. This is a policy piece, but how can we take an every man for himself model, which isn't working, to making it collaborative?
So interesting.
Yeah.
Judy, like I said, we talked about this before. You said your experience was a little different from what Jake was saying, but what are your thoughts about debate and about collaboration with kids needing to kind of talk and switching roles from becoming student to teacher to be able to learn and express and really think critically about these issues?
So I think that group work can definitely be beneficial to a lot of kids, but thinking about how we group kids could be important too, right? You could have one child that monopolizes the whole conversation. So I think it's just, those experiences are extremely important. I think it's really important in helping kids, you know, build their knowledge building and oral language and so forth. But when you have struggling readers in that group, you know, that's still going to affect them also, right? They might not be able to read the page, and maybe the other kid's going to want to read the page with them. So I think it can be positive. I think it's about cultivating the right environment for that experience to go well. But I also do think that, you know, in the field, sometimes if you don't group well, there's the kids that are just sitting there the whole time and they're not really doing anything.
Right.
And, you know, is it the best use of our time? I don't know.
Well, the question is this. Actually, the one piece of information I forgot to mention was that this wasn't a group. This is one-on-one.
Okay.
Which I actually think a dynamic of a one-on-one conversation can be very different than a group is intimidating. And when there's a group, there's a pack, which means that there's an alpha, right? But if it's one-on-one,
right.
If it's what, like they always say, if there's a bully or someone that is, one of my mentees was one of the kids was making fun of his dyslexia in the friend group. And I was coaching him through texting that kid that was making fun of him because they were all messing with each other, all boys, right? And I was like saying, dude, I actually really don't appreciate that. And he was like, bro, I'm so sorry. I won't do that again. Like, you got to remove the alpha and then you're on the same level, right? Not always, but most of the time.
So this is really one-on-one debate that you're talking about.
It's one-on-one. It's just one-on-one conversation about the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. It doesn't have to be reading. It's just, let's talk about what we learned and both parties can learn something perhaps. Or maybe the party that is knows more becomes the teacher and that helps them even more.
Right. Right.
So
yeah, so interesting. I could tell you that, you know, I think, you know, all three of us here are Jewish. And I could tell you that certainly lots of talk and arguments are typical.
We've been doing great. I think we've been doing great so far.
Debating issues is certainly a thing. So anyhow, last thoughts. My takeaway that I'm getting from all of this is motivation is about passion. Finding passion that makes you motivated. Something that is not motivating for you, you need habits to be built in. And that's how they could work together. Confidence and self-esteem comes with being able to have independence and to be able to advocate for oneself. You said so much here, Jake. I'm sure I'm not summarizing everything, but, you know, I just kind of wanted to condense some of this down. If I'm leaving anything out, please, jump in. I wanted, all of us to have our last thoughts to wrap up. Mm-hmm. So, Judy, I'll start with you. Any last thoughts that you have about our conversation?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Jake. You are so dynamic. You are so great to talk to. I am honored that you joined us here today. Really great time. You speak from the heart with that passion. And I think, you know, even the literacy view, right? Faith and I do this. We're not making any money off of this. We're just having a really good time. And the reason we enjoy it so much is because this is our passion. And that's why even if I'm tired and I don't want to get off the couch, which was today, my voice doesn't feel good, but I'm here because there is that passion. And I think it's really critical that as schools are shifting towards structured literacy, we still bring in that passion. We are still dealing with real human, with real children, with real emotions and teachers with emotions. And I think that, you know, kids won't get better at something if they don't have practice. So please, let's develop that habit when we're creating teacher schedules to give teachers that time to help kids read. We need to listen to our kids read and make that time. And if it's not a habit or it's not in the schedule, very often it doesn't happen. And that's it.
Yeah. Jake, I want to also thank you. We've had conversations before. I think you truly do have superpowers. Seriously, you are just an awesome person And I'm so glad to call you a friend. And
so much.
This conversation was so much fun. I really, really enjoyed
it. I think it lived up to its potential. It did.
Yeah. And I do think people are going to walk away with those practical tips that they look for. Right. And I, you know, I just wanted to say, I learn from you, you know, I really do. And just so happy you joined us. Your last thoughts, Jake.
Okay, so what I want to say is we're starting a new school year, okay? And on the topic of passion, like I said, it's been scientifically proven to be contagious, okay? Find your passion because your students and your children will feel it, okay? This starts with you, parents and teachers. You got to look at yourself in the mirror. If you're struggling finding your passion, look at your outlets. It'll help you. Make sure before you start the school year that you have an outlet that boosts your heart rate, passion, and creative expression. Because if you have those three things, you're going to rock this year. Okay. It's been so much fun being here. Again, Superpower Mentors is here for everyone. So please feel free to reach out to me if you're looking for any mentorship or anything that can help your school or your kids feel confident in themselves. Like, this is literally my life's work. Let's keep the conversation going and don't stop asking questions ever.
We will put the link for your business in the show notes. So anyone who wants to get in touch with you directly, that will be in the show notes. And once again, it's superpowermentors.com. And that's it. So let's wrap up. Judy, tell people how they can get in touch with us.
All right, I'm going to try my best, Faith. on Instagram, at Boxner-Damsky. Faith on Instagram, Faith Burkowski at High Five Literacy. On Twitter, at Boxner Judy. On Twitter, Faith at High Five Literacy, at Faith Burkowski. And on Facebook, The Literacy View, Real Teachers Letting Loose. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Good night, everyone. And thank you for joining us. Oh, and by the way, all those things that Jake mentioned at the end, finding an outlet. Well, we have a special episode coming up of the Literacy View where we have a Zumba instructor / reading specialist. That's right. We're going to Zumba. Right. And we're going to talk about finding your passion on the next episode of Self-Care. So Jake, actually, that was a great segue into that. All right. Good night, everyone.